It's a great pleasure to introduce the first in a series of three communication dialogues on nutrition prior to the International Conference of Nutrition, ICN2, which will be held in November. These dialogues are designed to raise awareness and stimulate debate around the importance of nutrition as we approach ICN2. The first dialogue here, led by the US, comes on the heels of an agreement just reached by members of state of FAO and the World Health Organization on policies aimed at ensuring the people around the world have access to healthier diets. We are heartened and welcome the declaration and the framework of action to be adopted at ICN2 that acknowledge malnutrition in all of its form. Two other dialogues led by the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and the G77, will be held on 22nd and 30th of October here in the Sex Hyatt Center. These dialogues are meant to spread the word on the first global summit on nutrition issues in more than 20 years. We are joined today by media representatives, especially from the US. We will have by Skype, Washington Post, we have Deutsche Presse Agentur, the news agency from Germany. We'll have The Guardian from UK. And they are connected remotely, and we are eager to hear their question to the panelists during the Q&A later after in this discussion. We hope this debate will offer a stage for sharing, showing, and telling, and for insights into how to amplify critical information regarding human health and development. They say knowledge is power, and we want to empower people with information on nutrition. It's a special honor to have Dr. Nancy Stetson here today to lead the U.S. dialogue, and we are pleased, too, to have in a few minutes the U.S. Ambassador David Lane with us. Our warm welcome and thanks to the panelists who made time to be here with us now in this day. Nutrition is a global issue, and there are a rich opportunity to share information and experience across borders. Ladies and gentlemen, the ICN2 is a unique opportunity for our member state to fully engage in this topic. FAO strongly advocates that food security and nutrition be mainstreamed into national policies for better nutrition, better lives. But first of all, I want to invite you now to see a short video produced on the occasion of the ICN2. If we can start.
Over the past 20 years, the global economy, food systems, and the nutritional status of populations around the world have been changing. While there's been a notable drop in the numbers of those who go to bed hungry, unacceptably high levels of malnutrition persist. Around half the global population currently suffers from some form of malnutrition. Malnutrition encompasses more than undernutrition, micronutrient deficiencies, or the lack of the right combination of nutrients, including minerals, vitamins, and trace elements, have a profound effect on our lives. And then there's the growing problem of obesity.
There is enough food in the world right now to feed everybody, but millions are still going hungry. Many aren't getting the right mix of food to be healthy, and growing numbers in all parts of the world are consuming too much.
Let's take a look at some of the numbers. As many as 842 million people around the world were chronically undernourished in 2013. That's one in every eight persons. It's a sharp decrease, around 17% compared with 20 years ago, but these numbers are still too high. Of child deaths, around 45% are linked to malnutrition. Some 99 million children are underweight. But in contrast lies another problem, obesity. 500 million adults were obese in 2013. Malnutrition, in all its forms, from undernutrition to micronutrient deficiencies and overnutrition, is a complex issue. A number of factors have contributed to the current picture. The economic downturn has made food prices more volatile. Natural disasters and climatic shocks have weakened food systems. Many countries don't have access to technology and investment needed to build resilience. Lifestyle and income changes, plus increased urbanization, have created new challenges. As diets rich in foods that are high in sugar, fat, and salt help fuel obesity. For us to improve diets and raise levels of nutrition internationally, we need coherent policies.
Now we have commitment. Commitment by itself is not enough. We really need to move further. Change that commitment into action and action into impact and results. And that's where we really need to go. We want, in the next few years, we want to really reduce the problem of stunting, the problem of malnutrition to zero. In fact, we want it to be zero because every life matters. You know, nobody should be left behind. No country should be left behind.
Global problems need global solutions. Let's meet the challenges together and act decisively to beat the nutrition challenges of today. Investing now isn't only a moral imperative. It makes economic sense because it will cut healthcare costs and promote development in this country and in yours.
It requires integrated policies involving all relevant sectors, including food, agriculture, health, education, and many others.
The challenges at the policy intersection of agriculture, nutrition, and health are already enormously complex. On current trends, this complexity will only grow. For all of these reasons, the coming International Conference on Nutrition will need to be a watershed event.
Thanks. So I want to invite my colleague, Marcela Villarreal, to take the moderation of this dialogue.
Thanks very much indeed, Mario. Let me join you in welcoming all of you here this afternoon with us. And I see that Ambassador Lane has just joined us. Very welcome. Welcome all of you, and welcome all of those of you who are following us throughout the world in webcast. This is indeed a global event. So it is my pleasure to give the floor to our first intervention, Daniel Gustafsson, who is the Deputy Director General of FAO. Dan?
Thank you very much, Marcela, and welcome to all of you, and especially to our distinguished panel members. It's a real pleasure for us to be able to do this, to host this event today, this dialogue ahead of ICN2. It's the first event, I think, after the agreement Sunday on the declaration and the framework for action. And it also comes, as all of you know, during the CFS Committee on Global Food Security, which I think is an ideal juncture. We've got private sector, civil society, governments represented, and we know that all stakeholders, all participants, all sectors are necessary to tackle malnutrition. It was also the theme, as many of you know, especially that are here, of the 2013 State of Food and Agriculture of FAO on nutrition and food systems, recognizing from FAO's perspective, but really from a let's say, not just our own view, that malnutrition is a complex problem that requires integrated action, but that good nutrition must begin with food and agriculture. Often we look at the role of agriculture in the more traditional sense, of course, of producing food, but clearly, and the panel here represents this really well, and also the CFS in the private sector mechanism, all the way through from the work that happens before planting with agricultural inputs during production, and then post-harvest with processing, marketing, retailing, and consumption. and how all along that chain of events and all along that value chain, there are opportunities and also problems that affect malnutrition. And this, I think, will come out, I'm sure, in the discussion. Both the immediate causes of malnutrition and the root causes are, of course, extremely complex. And as all of you know, I imagine most of you in the room have a connection with nutrition, or you wouldn't be at this event and you'd be at another one going on probably for CFS. But we know a lot more than we knew in 1992 in the first International Conference on Nutrition, a lot more empirical evidence of what works, a lot more experience, a lot more successful and unsuccessful things have been tried, and a lot more analysis of what needs to be done, including the emphasis on the need for political support and financing and getting everybody on board. The link for us, I mean, this is a big topic for us, of course, at FAO, the link between agriculture and nutrition has also been a really big topic for a long time. And it's a complex issue. I'm sure all of you know this really well, as we do here. And revolves in a number of ways around some big questions on why is it that when you look across countries, often the highly productive, the maize belts in a lot of countries, the highly productive areas are the same ones where you have the highest levels of malnutrition. A lot of this, of course, has to do with population density and where poverty is located and so on. But also, it is a real issue of why so many children of farm families are malnourished. At the same time, it's also true that when you look at agriculture programs and that improve agriculture productivity and production, which are, of course, vital, it doesn't necessarily lead to better nutrition. And it takes a lot of other interventions. And this is what then gave rise over the last decade or so to the discussion on nutrition-sensitive agriculture and a lot of other, let's say, ways to incorporate the thinking, kind of constant thinking about nutrition in agriculture and also looking at production and the family and women's roles in particular, how the family unit operates, where the money goes, what's being produced, and so on, as a way of tackling malnutrition. But again, and I'm sure this will come up in the discussions and in the presentations, always very complicated. We have ongoing work in Kenya, for example. There'll be a seminar on this in a couple of weeks looking at recent data related to policy work on food security, that one of the highest, indicators of, or let's say causal indicators of lower child malnutrition in Kenya turns out to be the presence of a cow in the family, which of course makes a lot of sense. Everybody, I think, would expect that almost, but we have empirical evidence to show what that impact would be. At the same time, this has come out, I remember, I think the name of the publication is Why Milk? I don't know if some of you probably know that. I think it was by Tufts University. We may have Tufts people here. If so, you could take credit. That showed, similarly, when you look at pastureless in Ethiopia, goats and cattle were, of course, critical in providing milk for children. But when, during a drought, the availability of milk went way down. So one of the interventions that they were proposing, or that showed itself to be really good also, was feeding livestock as a way of ensuring malnutrition for children. There are lots of things like this, but those, are two very interesting examples. But in any case, the interaction between and the roles of civil society and advocacy on the ground work, the role of government on policy and other things, and the role of the private sector throughout that value chain are all really critical in looking at systems. And I think that's really at the heart of what we are talking about in CFS, in the multi-stakeholder deliberations, and in ICN2, and here on the panel. And I'm delighted to have you here and again to welcome you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks very much indeed, and thanks for bringing our attention to the need for a systems approach, a holistic approach, where we need to look at agriculture in an integrated way with nutrition, also with health, and we need to know what goes on in the family, including livestock, including the context of the family, and very importantly, looking at women's roles. Thanks very much for that intervention. It is now my pleasure to introduce Dr. Nancy Stetson, who is the U.S. Special Representative for Global Food Security. And in that role, Dr. Nancy Stetson leads all aspects of U.S. diplomacy related to food security and nutrition. And that includes in support of Feed the Future, in support of the New Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition, and the 1,000 Days Partnership. Dr. Stetson has a very distinguished career, and among some parts of her career, she has served 26 years in the Senate as senior foreign policy advisor to the then Senator John Kerry. She did very many things, and among them, I'd just like to highlight a couple of them. She led efforts in a very wide area in a number of different areas, which included increasing development assistance to Africa, imposing sanctions to South Africa during the apartheid time, lifting U.S. trade embargo in Vietnam, addressing the HIV and AIDS and other deadly infectious diseases in terms of food security. And I'm sure that experience is going to be extremely useful now that we're facing another extremely deadly contagious disease. She has private sector experience, and she holds a PhD in political science from Columbia University. It's really my pleasure, Dr. Stetson, to welcome you to this panel.
Thanks, Marcella. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank my fellow panelists and FAO for organizing this conversation. As Marcella said, I've got a long title, which all adds up to three priorities, really. The first, as I sit here in this chair and from this perspective, is to ensure that food security and nutrition stay high on the U.S. agenda. Secondly, and this is a really exciting part for me, it's to look for new initiatives to build on our existing programs. Marcella has mentioned a couple of them, Feed the Future, the 1,000 Days Initiative. We think these are great programs, but we also think that there are more challenges out there in the world of food security, and particularly in the world of nutrition, that we can take on with your help, of course, and in partnership, of course. And so I'm really excited. I'm looking for them. And if anybody has any ideas, please come and see me after this session. Thirdly, we want to make our current efforts sustainable into the future. This can't be just a Obama administration thing. It has to be an effort, a program, an ongoing focus for future generations of people to come, but mostly future administrations in the United States as well. We want to make sure that food security and nutrition are fundamental parts of our U.S. development efforts. And so that's my challenge in the next, 2.5 years that I sit there. And as I said, I want to take it on with all of your assistance. Dan has talked a little bit about linkages, and I would agree. Nutrition is a vital link between our goals in food security, global health, poverty reduction. We can't fully succeed, and we all know this, we cannot fully succeed in any of these areas without addressing the challenge of malnutrition. In the United States, it is a key element in both our domestic and international programs. On the home front, our First Lady's Let's Move initiative addresses the challenge of childhood obesity in the United States. Our Department of Agriculture has any number of programs supporting nutrition at home among vulnerable populations, and also internationally through school feeding programs. And on the international front, we have integrated nutrition strongly, both into President Obama's Feed the Future Food Security Initiative and his Global Health Initiative. The 1,000 Days Partnership, which was launched when Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, focuses on maternal and child health. Hope to talk about more about this partnership a little bit later. But we think it's a great place to build out our nutrition efforts. And finally, I would just say that USAID is integrating nutrition into all of its development efforts across the whole portfolio. So we are on a roll. But at the core of all this effort are really partnerships. We can't make a sustained impact either at home, sustained impact at home or abroad without partnerships. We need them, as we all know, because no one sector, be it health, ag, education, can solve malnutrition on its own. We need to bring the agronomist and the nutritionist together to talk about a common vision. We need to make sure actors in the health system and in the food system work together to promote healthy diets. We need partnership across actors, so many actors. When I first came into this job, I was frankly stunned about how many actors and activities there are in the world of food security. Everyone doing great work, but we all need to talk together because nutrition touches all the stakeholders, whether it's government creating an enabling environment for the healthy food system, the consumer making choices at the market, civil society organizing the farmers, private companies selling food at local markets or at big stores, or the international organizations like the FAO and others providing us with that much-needed technical expertise and assistance and helping focus our global efforts. We all have a role, but we all have a responsibility, a collective responsibility to ensure that our efforts complement each other, that we're not working at cross purposes. And in the United States, we're trying to do that at home. We're trying to strengthen partnerships among our own agencies. We are working on a coordinated whole of government effort in the area of nutrition. And we are expanding our partnerships with civil society and academia and other actors in the private sector so that we can maximize our collective efforts. We all know that different stakeholders have different, slightly different perspectives on how to succeed, what we should do to tackle the problems of malnutrition, and we also know we don't always agree. I saw that a lot when I dealt with global health issues, when I was working on legislation and with the many interest groups, including Joss's interest group, on just how do we tackle such a horrific problem and how do we tackle it successfully together. We don't always agree, but I hope that we can let disagreement not stand in the way of our larger goals. And I think that our efforts in this area prove that we can and we must bridge our differences together, because only through these partnerships can we expand resources, can we expand our reach, can we translate words into action. I wanted to talk a little bit about the ICN2. Excuse me. Because we're going to come together soon, next month, at the next International Conference on Nutrition. I think it was a pretty difficult week of negotiation to try to come to closure on the political declaration and the framework for action. But I think the good news is that it was done. Both documents were completed. They were completed successfully. And they give us a lot of understanding about where we can go from here. But most importantly, they're a testament to how much the member states put on the importance, how much importance the member states put on nutrition. Now that the documents are done, what are we going to do? We're going to just have another conference? We're going to just talk? Jenna, are we going to translate talk into action? Are we going to take it into the ongoing discussion about the SDGs? You know, what can the ICN2 accomplish? I think we believe it can accomplish a number of things. I mean, first of all, we know that it can elevate the importance of nutrition at the global and national level. We know that it can broaden the audience and allow us to speak with as one community, not just one organization speaking, one civil society speaking, or one part or, in a part or another speaking, but speaking together. We know it can foster new champions for nutrition. It can build political will to make a real sustained impact. But most importantly, it can provide a platform to shape our efforts, to shape the dialogue on nutrition for generations to come. The United States hopes that will happen at this conference next month. We hope that coming out of the conference, all of the partners of the ICN2 will use the agreed-upon political commitments and the policy recommendations to guide their efforts to target malnutrition and to build their action agenda. And finally, the ICN2, in our view, in the U.S. view, shouldn't take place in a vacuum. it should really strongly feed into the post-2015 process. So we are absolutely sure at the end of that process that nutrition has a very strong role in our sustainable development agenda. So I'm going to stop there because I know there will be questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Stetson, and thank you for bringing out the role of partnerships. As you may know, partnerships is one of the priorities of DG Graciano, on the understanding that if we're really serious about eliminating hunger within our lifetimes, because that's our challenge, we can't do it alone. And it's, of course, not up to the FAO to do it alone, and we couldn't. And it's the governments themselves could not do it on their own. So without the participation, and as you have said it so well, without the participation of each actor with their own roles and responsibilities, contributing from their own perspectives, we will never eliminate hunger within our lifetimes. So we need everybody at the table, and even if we disagree, and that's bound to happen with partnerships, we disagree, but we bring in a big contribution from everybody's own perspectives. And I think that the process leading to ICN2 is a very good example. Here we've seen a lot of disagreement, as could be expected, but we're getting there. We're coming there with this process in which we bring the partners together, and as you say, the ICN2 is going to be just the beginning, because after that we're going to have the hard work. So it is my pleasure now to introduce our very distinguished panel. And I'm very happy to give the floor in a moment to, in this order, Dr. Luis Cantrell, who is a permanent representative to the United Nations for the International Chamber of Commerce and coordinator of the Global Business Alliance for the post-2015. After that, I will be giving the floor here at my right to Francesco Aureli, who is from Save the Children and is the representative to the international institutions. And of course, last but not least, Josh Losman, who is the Deputy Director of Global Policy and Advocacy at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So, Dr. Luis Cantrell, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Maria.
5 minutes each. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to limit you because that is going to give us time afterwards for the discussion, and I hope it's going to be a rich discussion.
Very good.
You have the floor, please.
I, too, want to congratulate the organizers to organize this dialogue on the margins of the CFS meeting, because in the business sector, we believe that dialogue is critical before you can have partnerships. And I was invited to come to the CFS to convey to the participants how business has engaged in the post-2015 negotiation and process in New York. And I think that we can say many of us remember 2000 when the 189 member states came to New York and signed the Millennium Summit, and which launched the MDGs, the 8 MDGs. Well, the private sector nor civil society was very much involved in that process. But I think we can all congratulate the United Nations in launching a very comprehensive, inclusive process to engage all stakeholders in the elaboration of a post-2015 development agenda. And I just heard Dr. Stetson mention that they've just concluded in the lead up to the ICN2 a very difficult period week of negotiations, but that indeed there was a successful outcome. And at the end of the day, the United Nations and the agencies, FAO, are intergovernmental bodies. And bringing together all the member states to come to a negotiated outcome document, which will guide action in the coming years. And what's unique and what's happened in terms of both the post-2015 development agenda and the ICN process is that the United Nations, in its wisdom, has recognized that the problems that confront the global community now know no boundaries, and that all actors in society must come to the table to engage and provide inputs into what will be the next agenda. And this is definitely true in terms of post-2015 in New York, and I'm pleased to see that it is happening here in Rome as well. What I'd like to stress in terms of moving forward in the lead up to ICN2 is the critical importance of engaging with the private sector. food security and nutrition are very important to business, especially with business playing a role throughout the entire agriculture supply chain, from seeds to food processing to all the products farmers need to grow, as well as through the distribution chain. As we all know, the MDGs placed poverty and hunger at the top of the list, but they were not met. And that is partly due to the failure to focus adequately on agriculture and rural development. That is clearly not going to be the case in the post-2015 development agenda. And I am pleased to report to you all that the private sector mechanism active here was also very active in part of the Global Business Alliance for post-2015, paying close attention to goal number 2 around food security, and was very actively engaged in terms of the elaboration of the goals and the targets. Another issue that it will be critically important is empowering women. It is crucial for improving nutrition around the world. Efforts should seek to engage women farmers and to increase the number of female extension agents, and given the resulting benefits in household welfare and nutrition. Sustainable agriculture has got to be seen as knowledge-based and requires a holistic view. There is no one-size-fits-all solution in agriculture as well as in nutrition, and we would like to emphasize that both in terms of post-2015 and the outcomes of the ICN2 conference, it must reflect a broad diversity of farming systems, from livestock to crop, horticulture to agroforestry, modern to traditional, cooperatives to businesses, smallholders to large. And what's also going to be critically important, we all hear this whole issue around partnerships. What both ICN2 as well as the new post-2015 development agenda is going to do, it will create the in a sense the moral agenda. But it will be absolutely necessary to create partnerships at the global, at the national, and at the local levels. It was clearly demonstrated in the video that the global problems around malnutrition require global solutions, but at the same time, the differences from country to region are going to be extremely vast, and that there is going to have to be local responses to local problems, and that all the different sectors in society are going to have to be called upon. And as was mentioned again by Dr. Stetson, there are actors in this who don't normally want to come to the table. But I think the problems are recognized by all the actors in society today, that business needs governments to create the right enabling frameworks, the right regulations, the smart regulations. But governments can't do everything alone. And what the private sector brings is the research know-how, the means of implementation. And I think that we are all ready to come to the table and bring our expertise and respect for each of the other actors in society. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. I couldn't agree with you more on the importance of the private sector for the whole of the fight against hunger. We cannot imagine eliminating hunger without the active engagement of the private sector. Actually, tomorrow morning, we're meeting with 90 representatives of the private sector right here in the framework of the CFS, and also about empowering women. Impossible to think about eliminating hunger without empowering women. So thank you for that. It's my pleasure now to give the floor to Francesco Aureli.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for inviting me and for organizing this, the US government and FAO. I'm not here representing and speaking on behalf of the whole civil society, because you said, Marcella, very well, that there are disagreements among member states, and there are disagreements sometimes also among multilateral agencies and sometimes also inside the civil society. So it's a process that we are all working on, I think. And the good note of ICN is that until recently, ICN2, is that until recently there was no traction, and there was probably malnutrition didn't have that profile to really enable policymakers and other decision makers to stand up and speak about nutrition in the way we are doing all today. So I think that disagreements are good, because if there are disagreements, there are also, I mean, there is care, there is attention for the issue. And as you said, Nancy, the negotiation was difficult, but at least we are working on the issues of malnutrition, of undernutrition, in a different way. And so I actually was very happy to be invited to speak about partnerships, because I think that we cannot go back on partnerships, and that we have to find a way to do partnership in a better way, and to create and you just mentioned that, to create these regulations that are the right regulations. And probably what would be good, especially looking at our experience as Save the Children and also other civil society organization, is to really create the right platform to speak all together, to interact in an effective way. And this is probably something that is happening. Nancy, you were mentioning maternal, newborn and child health. And I mean, from my experience, I can see that in that sector, which is very much linked and is part of the nutrition discourse that we are tackling here, maybe we're doing an interesting effort to really create the right platform where we can speak all together. But it's a process, and I think that in this process we need to really look at the different aspects of nutrition, which we all, I think, know that are important, and try to relook at what was negotiated probably in the last 3 days in the near future, and try to insert that into the post 2015 agenda with a strong focus at the economic aspects of malnutrition, and how that affects and impacts the low-income countries that want to come out and to achieve a middle-income status with vibrant and dynamic economic, but they are affected by nutrition. As Save the Children, we came up with a report. We published a report which is Food for Thought, and if you have time to look at it, it was published in 2013, where we say that 20% of the adults who suffered from stunting are less productive. And there is a study that is conducted at the country level. So I think that the economic aspect is very important, and this leads us to probably the most important aspect that we are trying to tackle, every one of us, I think, and that we will tackle in November here at FAO together with the WHO. And it's the issue of multisectoral approaches. And we spoke about agriculture, how important is agriculture. And we also worked a lot on the nutrition-sensitive agriculture intervention. And we're working a lot on that, talking about partnership within the Feed the Future and with the Spring partnership together with the US government. But we published this other report, which is the nutrition-sensitive agriculture, where we think that, to look at production is not to ensure that there will be consumption. And to look at food is not to ensure that there will be nutrition. So multisectoral approach, not only on agriculture, but on many other sectors, like water and sanitation, other social determinant of nutrition, is for us the most important part that we need to look. And you were talking about that, which should involve all the stakeholders, agronomists, governments, and all the others. But we should try to do that with the right platform. I mean, among the specific intervention, we have breastfeeding, we have child and young feeding, and vitamin E supplements. But if we don't look really at social behavioral change, especially in the agricultural sector, and mobilization and information and the right information, we will not be able to really achieve anything. And it was also underlined by the Lancet recently that, I mean, even if we cover 90% of the specific intervention, we will only achieve probably the reduction on malnutrition and undernutrition by 20% unless we work at cross-sectoral level. So I don't want to go ahead too much because I think that the most important part is really to involve the audience in this. But I mean, the issue of partnership is relevant, is very important, and we need to find a way to really work in the best way and interacting in a constructive way. So I think I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
Thanks very much indeed, Francesco. And thanks for making such an important point of the need of coming together throughout the sectors and throughout the actors on a topic that is so important that it should make us forget our differences. It's essential for every single human being on the planet, and that is nutrition. So thank you for that intervention.
Sorry, I don't want to correct you, but I wouldn't actually forget our differences. I would value our differences and find a dialogue, which is the most important thing, I think.
Forget the disagreements. Go over the disagreements in order to have the common cause of improving nutrition together. And then you can talk about the disagreements and the differences. Absolutely. And the differences are diversity. And that's an essential part of having good and sustainable solutions. So thank you very much. And now it's my pleasure. Our final panelist, Josh Losman, you have the floor.
Thanks, Marcela, and thanks for welcoming us here today. We're perhaps a bit of the odd duck here, not a government, not a civil society organization, not the private sector, but I want to make four points related to nutrition and ICN2, and the first one perhaps says maybe why we're up here. Nutrition is a priority for the foundation. We sometimes get that question. It's both a priority directly as a nutrition strategy. It's also a priority through other strategies like agriculture or our water, sanitation, hygiene programs that are critical to improving nutrition. For those who don't know the background, just quickly, the foundation strategy focuses on the 1,000-day window. We invest in research, micronutrient delivery, promotion of breastfeeding, and ag nutrition interventions, both directly in increasing caloric intake and diversity of diet, but also through indirect pathways, increasing incomes and other. Also importantly, we invest a lot of resources in building civil society in the areas of nutrition, agriculture, food security broadly so that we make sure that nutrition stays a high priority for governments and other actors on the agenda. And it leads me to the second point, which is we feel like those investments have paid great dividends in the past couple of years. Leave some challenges, and I'll come to those, but have paid dividends. The Nutrition for Growth Summit, the CADEP Plus 10 process this year, which we spoke about in the CFS plenary this morning, incorporated nutrition in a much more robust way than the last set of commitments out of Maputo. We have a commitment from Brazil to take this forward, the Nutrition for Growth commitments forward. So there's a lot of momentum and energy around nutrition. I do want to note, as we pivot towards ICN2, we still have our work cut out for us there. So we have both, in many cases, lower than we should government spending in high-burden countries, but we also, nutrition remains less than 1% of global donor assistance. And so even with this increase in nutrition's profile over the last few years, it's still a very small percentage, and with the stats that you heard of the burden, that seems out of whack to us. Point three, despite that, we have several examples of success at country level. In Maharashtra state in India, we had 39% of children under age 2 who were stunted, and up to 2006. By 2012, that dropped to 23%. We saw similar declines in Rwanda and Peru, and all of them share some similarities, and there are many in the room who are much more qualified to talk about those, but one that I would point out from the perspective that I come to and I think I come from and is very relevant to ICN2 is that each of these governments took holistic, whole-of-government, state, or federal approaches to these solutions. And without that, and we've heard the focus on that already in the remarks for ICN2, I don't think we're learning the lessons that we've seen in successful states and countries so far. So point four, and the one I'll linger on for a minute, is so with this global momentum, some country successes, what do we want out of ICN2? It's been 22 years in the coming, so we should see some real things come out of it. So first is we want to highlight these country examples. We're seeing success. We should learn from those. We should highlight those. We should transfer the lessons of those in very specific and concrete ways. They all will be applied differently in each local setting, but there are lessons that are emerging across the board. One of those I mentioned is about these cross-sectoral linkages. So it's both about a multitude of ministries that are engaging in this issue, and then some specific ones where we expect and hope for deliverables out of ICN2. So a commitment coming out of Nutrition for Growth, the Global Panel on Agriculture, Food Systems for Nutrition, has been doing important work looking at these linkages between agriculture and nutrition, and we're seeing a policy guidance come out of them, come out of the panel, that we hope will be taken up, endorsed, and the actions debated and hopefully acted upon. Another critical note, the WHA Global Nutrition Targets, a set of WHA policy briefs being released that provide guidance on what's working and where to go. We hope those will also be taken up, debated, discussed, and acted upon. We'll also see, out of the Nutrition for Growth Summit, so going back to the 1% global ODA, I hope we can do something about that. There'll be a global nutrition report launched at this ICN2. This was a commitment out of the summit that will both bring together key impact data on nutrition, but also track progress on the pledges that were made, Nutrition for Growth. And so we're making progress. We need to hold donors accountable. We need to hold governments accountable. Those are big commitments that can deliver real results, but we certainly need to see them. So I want to end on one note in the frame of maybe disagreements or, letting us discuss coming up. With every conference, you get the potential for great momentum. You can also raise the concern of greater complexity. And it all has to be geared towards, in our view, and I'm sure we all share this, how to deliver outcomes. How do we deliver impact? I think we've heard results to action as a phrase used at least three times here already. And large conferences like this have a tendency to create additional architecture. And that's a concern for us. We've just come through a lot of global moments in nutrition. We're moving through global negotiations, regional negotiations, et cetera. Sometimes architecture is needed, and certainly we've been a part of creating them, so I won't out of hand and blanketly say they're never needed. Sometimes they end up as a result of conferences having a lot of us around and the feeling that we need to deliver something tangible, and that takes the shape of architecture. And I would just throw out a concern that is more about a blanket concern with conferences than specific negotiations here, that I hope that rather than focusing on new architecture as a deliverable, we're focusing on how we can use ICN2 to bring increased value add from all the various research products, lessons learned that we have, and the architecture that we have today, and really focus those on country level delivery and accelerating progress there. So I'll stop there. Maybe that generates some conversation. And thanks again for inviting us to this.
Thanks very much, Josh. I think that your message is very clear. It can be done. It can be done. There are examples. There are lessons learned. And part of the lessons learned is that we need a holistic approach. And as I think we have the agreement of all the panel members, we need to go across sectors and across actors to do that. And thank you also for making emphasis on this point on let's focus on what value we can add rather than on new architectures. Thanks for that. Now, with that, I would like now to turn to the questions and answers. And I'd like to turn to, we have online followers. And yes, they're coming onto the screen. We have Roberto Ferdman from the Washington Post. And I'd like to give you the floor. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Please, you have the floor.
So my question is specific to how the FAO uses developed countries as examples, and in some cases the opposite, not examples. I'm wondering how does the experience of countries like the United States which have delivered food to much of the population but now suffer from comparatively high obesity rates, amounts of food waste, and persistent food inequality affect the way in which the FAO approaches countries and regions elsewhere?
Thanks very much. That is a question directed to the FAO. I'd like to ask Dan to give an answer.
Okay, thanks. It's a very interesting question, not only, let's say, how to take U.S. experience, but other countries' experiences also, and how to apply them elsewhere is really, to a large extent, driving a lot of what we do in terms of, let's say, analyzing experience and either that we support or that we follow and disseminating that or getting other countries interested in it and so on. In the case of the U.S. in particular, and in particular around food waste and obesity, there I think that's a very good one and a really an excellent example of what we can learn from U.S. experience. A couple of things stand out from the U.S. On that. One is around legislation and policy on how you what you do with food. Others can speak about this better with the Good Samaritan law and what you can get that goes into food banks that might otherwise not be allowed. The other one that I think just real briefly is the experience that shows that food waste is an area, food loss, but particularly food waste, is an area where government, private sector, civil society, all are working towards the same objective. And that is not often the case. Often there are, in fact, interests that are at odds with each other. But in the case of particularly with regard to the experience of community food banks and other things, the idea that you can find common interests around food waste that aids in reducing hunger and also through reducing malnutrition, reducing poverty, with private sectors and civil society working together is an excellent example that we have taken up elsewhere.
Thanks, Dan. Any other? Yes, please, Louise.
I just wanted to add another point. You asked, you know, what is the role of FAO and in using examples of individual countries? And again, I think it's important to stress again that as we approach ICN2, this is an intergovernmental deliberation, so that the experience of any one country will inform the deliberations and will help guide in terms of developing a policy that is, in a sense, that can be action-oriented. It's not only about sharing best practices, which are critically important in terms of the policy arena, but it's also the fact that an intergovernmental deliberation such as this can bring out what has failed. What are the problems? Because sometimes problems are able to better guide policy than the successes.
Thanks. Let me now turn. We're trying to get online. Let me just check if you're there. Lucy Lamble from The Guardian. I know that the connection earlier was weak and we kind of lost you a couple of times, but are you there? Are you listening?
I'm here. I'm listening.
You're listening. Great. We can't see you, but we can hear you. Please go ahead if you have a question.
Thank you very much. Obviously, always encouraging to see nutrition get this kind of focus. On the other hand, we've not yet seen the detail of the declarations, nor been privy to the negotiations, but not at all surprised to hear that the role of the private sector has perhaps been one of the more contentious areas. So given that and the power imbalances, interested to know what kind of checks and imbalances you've got in place to make sure that we mitigate against any unintended social impacts. It was interesting to... Sorry.
Yes. That's a very important question, and I'd like to turn to the panel to see if anybody would like to take it. I know I would like to make a comment, but please.
Yes. Again, bringing non-governmental stakeholders into this into these discussions and deliberations is again new for the United Nations, and I know probably new for ICN too. But I think that there is enough understanding among the member states who are doing this that, again, it will be critically important to engage with the private sector. There are going to be areas of disagreement, and there are going to be contentious issues, but it's also recognized that the private sector has got to be at the table, has got to be allowed to be part of the solution. Everybody is striving to get into the private sector, whether or not it's the smallhold farmer, and so there the views, the policy implications are going to be critically important. As I mentioned earlier, the private sector wants to work with government, wants to be able to put in place the regulations and the regulatory environment that are going to move forward. And again, in terms of informing public opinion about nutrition, clearly, we need to work with our civil society colleagues. It's interesting to note that in the discussions around the post-2015 development agenda, the one goal where both civil society and business coalesced was around this goal 16, which concerns good governance, rule of law, and capable institutions, because business can only thrive in societies that thrive.
Thanks. Any other panelists would like to take the floor on this question?
I don't know if I should go after the private sector, but I think that to me and to most of many of us, I think it is important to really involve and get together, as I was saying before. But I think that we really need to focus on the right rules and regulations. That should probably come, first of all, from the member states at the country level to defend themselves and try to really regulate the involvement of all the different stakeholders. And I'm not just talking about private sector. So I think that to create really balances, we need to try to work at the same level to create this regulation. But it first needs to come from the country level.
Thanks. Lucy, what I can tell you from the FAO perspective is that we do have in place a very good, solid strategy to have increased partnership with the private sector, which of course includes aspects of due diligence and risk management procedures instituted within the organization and approved by a member countries. And then another very important area of our work and our role as an international organization is to get out the codes of conduct that people, and not only the private sector, but everybody, should be following if we want to engage responsibly in the fight against hunger, but in other areas, whatever we do. So we have the voluntary guidelines for the responsible tenure, for the responsible governance of land tenure, food, fisheries and forestry. We have the principles for responsible investment in agriculture. And these are instruments that are tremendously powerful and that want to engage all of the actors in a responsible way. So this is another way of checks and balances that we are putting into the system. Now, I would like to move to also from far, from Brussels. We have Craig Willey, who is online. Craig, can you hear us? Can you see us?
Yes, I can hear and see you. Can you hear me?
Very good. Craig from the German Hello. News agency, the Deutsche Presseagentur. You have the floor.
Okay, I have two questions. My first question for the U.S. Special Representative. What do you think about the role that the upcoming EU-US Free Trade Agreement TTIP can play on food security? Some are concerned that it would lead to more concentration of agriculture and so could undermine food sovereignty. And second question, what do you think, this is more generally for the panel, what do you think about the relationship between food insecurity in the Sahel and political instability there? Thank you.
Can we go over the list again, please? Because I didn't catch the third one.
Okay, could you please repeat your first question?
So the first question was on the relationship between the EU-US Free Trade Agreement TTIP and food security. And about the concerns that it could lead to greater concentration of farms because of, you know, a more transnational agricultural sector.
I have to say that I'm here as a special representative for global food security, not a trade negotiator or a trade representative. So we work closely with the U.S. Trade Representative's office on issues like this, but I am not going to walk into their space and discuss that particular question. So I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to refer you to them if you want an answer for that one.
Let us now refer to the second question about the relationship between food insecurity and issues of the political agenda, specifically the Sahel. Does anybody on the panel want to take that question up?
Well, yeah, I think we would all probably have a similar view on the direct link between food insecurity and political instability. I mean, the idea, I think, that came home very strongly after the 2008 food price crisis was that food security really does have security implications. And political instability is has a lot of, again, both immediate and more root causes, but food insecurity is certainly high on that agenda.
Just add that as I've come into this job for just for 3 months now, but it is an area that we want to look at very closely to see if there are any kind of mechanisms or procedures or whatever we want to call it that to look at the range from fragile states, for example, that have been affected by disease, such as Liberia with Ebola, which has turned into a food security problem, or whether we have varying degrees of fail, you know, states that are having more difficulties, where governments are having more difficulty, including political instability. So it's a huge topic, and I think that the answers to how you address them are not evident immediately, but I do think it's something that we in the United States and our government want to take a look at and see if we can't work with all of you to find some sort of creative approach to these kinds of problems.
Thanks. Just to complement what you just said, we have made correlations between countries that are in protracted crisis, long-standing crisis, and we have found that there's a high correlation between protracted crisis and food insecurity. So countries that are in this situation tend to have significantly higher levels of food insecurity. Let us now go to the people present here in Rome. And it's my pleasure now to give the floor to anybody who would like to take it here with us together. I see a hand over there, so please introduce yourself. You're going to get a microphone in just 1 second. So please introduce yourself and ask your question.
It's not so much a question, but I just wanted to... So my name is Martin Gallagher. I'm working with the SRSG for Food Security and Nutrition, and in particular with the Sun Movement Secretariat in Geneva. And I just wanted to sort of mention what we've learned from working with 54 Sun countries, with thousands of civil society organizations, with the UN system, and with a large group of donors. And I think it correlates very closely with what your panelists were saying. So what countries have told us about how they can successfully scale up nutrition is that they need to be in the lead, that they need to take responsibility, that they need to look at tackling malnutrition in all its forms and have a comprehensive and holistic approach, that they need to adopt multi-sectoral approaches for good nutrition. They need to adopt multi-stakeholder approaches, and that's the partnerships I think we were talking about here. That, very importantly, the people's rights and equity need to be put at the center of the work if you want to have sustainable long-term results, and that once you've achieved everything, you have to measure it to make sure it's actually happening. Thank you.
Thanks indeed. I think there's agreement, but I'd just like to ask the panelists if you want to comment on this. Yes, should I give Josh the floor first, because you haven't taken the floor now at this point?
Two things to second in what you're saying. It's hard to disagree with anything you said. But one is to compliment Sun, and particularly, I think in the last couple of years, we've seen a real acceleration of momentum of Sun's work with countries, very much in the principles you've said. And it's starting to become a longer list, Peru, Tanzania, Guatemala, Nepal, that you really see strong Sun scale-up programs that are being led by countries, supported by donors and partners in a multi-stakeholder way, and it's paying dividends. So the second point I'd say, which for those who've worked with the Gates Foundation will be no surprise, I'd want to second the point on data. I think this is true in agriculture and nutrition, that in some cases we need different data, in some cases we need it faster, in some cases we need to get it to the right people, which is in each part of the system. We're seeing failures across the three. So I think that's been an exciting part of the post-2015 process, is the fairly nerdy concept of data seems to be getting some more socially cool traction, and that's odd to a lot of us, but a very good thing. I think even though it may seem probably not to those in the room, but maybe to some less involved observers, not core to the agenda, we find it absolutely critical both for accountability but also to figure out what's working, how to target better, et cetera. So just second those points on data and then on the key role that Sun's playing.
I just wanted to add that in terms of the elements that you cited around scaling up nutrition, they are exactly the same elements that are coming out of the post-2015 agenda. And especially I'd like to note that there were two intergovernmental processes put into place coming out of Rio. One was the Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals, which, as you know, went through this whole 18-month process of deliberating and elaborating a potential set of 17 goals for the development agenda, of which food security and hunger are goal number two. But the other one was the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts on Sustainable Development Financing, which is going to be key. The UN clearly recognized that the financing around this new development agenda is going to be key. But one of the most important elements coming out of that report was the importance of country ownership and country responsibility. That although ODA is critically important, it's going to be mostly about domestic resource mobilization. And here, the private sector is hoping and anticipating that we're now going to see the role of domestic private sector becoming the engine of growth. And this speaks to the role of small-scale farmers. It speaks to the growth of the SME sector as drivers of economic growth. And then you talked also about multi-sectoral and multi-stakeholder. And again, it's all about partnerships that we're all talking about in terms of means of implementation. So I think that we're in many of these different fora, we're getting the right elements together.
Yeah, I just want to add that from the United States perspective, the country-owned element of all these efforts are critical. I mean, we all know what needs to be done. We have lots of forums. We have a lot of paper. We have a lot of expertise. But at the end of the day, and we can offer assistance and we can offer resources to the extent that we can. Although, as Louise has said, you know, ODA is not cannot sustain all of this. We need to have more resources. And indeed, we in our office and in the State Department are working very aggressively to see if there are other financing mechanisms that we may be able to employ to do just that. But fundamentally, it has to come, as you have said, from the countries. And it's great news that they want it to come from them, because every situation is different. And the country-owned strategy is at the core of all our programs in the area of food security and nutrition, and it will remain there.
Thanks. Any other questions from the audience here in Rome? Yes, please.
I am Dr. Vicky Kinurgiopoli. I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Alberto Corbino. We are representing an academia, an academic institution in Rome, Arcadia University, that is in cooperation with Roma Tre University. And we would like actually to extend further a helping hand and see how academia can actually reconfigure the relationship between, let's say, the national organizations, for-profit or non-for-profit organizations, and see how we can work together, both with the expertise of academics, together with the expertise of people that are working, such as yourselves, in very prestigious and highly profile jobs, and see how we can actually find new solutions, create new initiatives and development with regards to raising awareness for malnutrition, raising awareness as well how we can actually use food security and what's the need for food security in both developing and underdeveloped countries. So thank you.
Thanks very much indeed. The academia is a very important partner. I see one more hand. I think that's we will have only time for two more interventions, and then we will close the panel.
Thanks very much. Chris Arsenault from the Thomson Reuters Foundation. Can you talk a little bit more about the specific areas where the different actors have clashed ahead of these summits, private sector, NGOs, and the UN? Where are some of the particular stumbling blocks where consensus hasn't been reached on different concrete policy issues? Thanks.
Anyone would like to take up that up? Francesco.
I mean, very openly and transparently, we do have issues of being at the same table when discussing about a political statement and framework for action. And I think that that's why I was actually emphasizing the need of platform that would put everyone on the same level. And of course, when there are economic interests, the non-profit side is always the one that has concerns, but not only the non-profit side, also the other and the public. So that's why also I was talking about global rules and regulations and defending, and that should come actually from the country, because it's important that there is this ownership and that it is really seen as a public responsibility at the country level sometimes. But there is a need also of global regulation. So I think that also the work that you were mentioning, Marcella, is important. But we need to, I think, sit all at the same table to talk about that. This actually links to something that is probably something that I wanted to add to our previous speaker, which is the accountability. He spoke a lot about measuring and the importance of measuring. I think that countries should also come out with indicators, which are disaggregated indicators that could be measured, and that we need mutual accountability. And this partnership at the same level, I think, should be there in countries with all the stakeholders, but not with someone, pointing the finger to others about accountability, but being mutual accountable. And so also the civil society, first of all, and all the other stakeholders, and share this and look at the measurement tools and the indicator in a disaggregated way, but with responsibility from all the stakeholders.
Thanks. Luis?
The issue of accountability at the global level is an interesting issue. Now, the outcomes, the negotiated text, the outcome document of ICN2, or the post-2015 agenda that will be negotiated and elaborated in September of 2015, are not legally binding. This is at the global level. And many have said that one of the great successes of the MDGs was that they were not legally binding, but they animated political will at the national level. And when you talk about accountability, what most people think about in terms of accountability is that are governments accountable to their citizens? And so again, that is where the action will be. Is it going to be at the national level and then going down at the more local level? And in fact, the role of local authorities is going to be critically important going on. And in fact, many would say that local authorities are ahead of their national governments in terms of putting into place correct policies and regulations, whether or not it has to do with climate change or nutrition or a whole host of issues. So that it's going to be, but then, okay, what is the role of the United Nations and FAO in setting this framework? It is providing, it's two things. It's providing that moral agenda. It is providing that framework. And number two, it's providing the space to bring together the actors to be able to inform each other. Now, the private, the stakeholders do not sit at the table during these intergovernmental negotiations, but they inform these negotiations. And I have to say that I sat through every single one of the intergovernmental meetings on the Open Working Group for Sustainable Development Goals, and the stakeholders were clearly invited to inform the process.
Thanks. We have our last intervention from the floor.
Jomo. Thank you very much, Marcella. The first question from the webcast was directed to Dan Gustafson, and being an American and an international civil servant, I think he felt constrained in responding. But I do think, as a non-American, I can speak about the lessons which could be learned from the United States experience. One of the big problems we have here in Rome is the question of the right to food, and the fact that the right to food has often been seen as something which is not acceptable to Americans. But in effect, we see that the commitment to the four freedoms, and particularly the freedom from want, and specifically freedom from hunger, is in fact been it's a negative way of describing the right to food. And in reality, we have seen tremendous progress. If we look at the introduction of the food stamps program, it's probably the first significant national level effort in any country in the world to realize the right to food. If we look further along the way, we've seen very important American leadership. For example, at the World Food Summit in 1974, Secretary of State Kissinger looked to a world that 10 years hence, he expected the world to be free of hunger. That was an important commitment, and it was important for the creation of the World Food Program in particular. Looking at the 1980s, we've seen how the surveys which have been done by USDA have been so important in terms of trying to understand food insecurity. And this has been the inspiration for the Voices of the Hungry project, which FAO has started to try to develop what is called a food insecurity experience scale. If I can conclude on a last example, because Dr. Stetson talked about the Obama administration, but what we have seen in the 5 years since 2009, under the leadership of the First Lady, we have seen a reduction of childhood obesity by 43% in 5 years. That's a tremendous achievement. While childhood obesity is growing in most of the rest of the world, we see it declining in the United States, which used to be number one in terms of childhood obesity. So these are not trivial achievements, and I think there's much we can learn from the United States as much as the United States can learn from the rest of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I have. Can you be very quick, because we're just...
I will be very quick, which is to say that Jomo just demonstrated what we believe. It's all about action and getting it done. And that's our starting point and our finishing point for this question of food security and nutrition.
Thanks very much indeed. I will not attempt to summarize this very rich discussion. I will just put on the table a couple of messages which I thought were very strong. In the first place, it can be done. So let us go from here with a very positive attitude towards ICN2 and hope, and especially beyond ICN2. But in order for it to be done, I think that everybody agreed that it has to be done in partnership, and it has to be done with everybody participating across the sectors and across the actors. And for that to happen, it has to be done through dialogue. in dialogue where everybody has a voice and everybody can express themselves in their agreement and in their differences, and each one bringing their own contribution, which from their own perspective, from their own responsibility, will enrich the whole dialogue, the whole process. It is, of course, a question of country ownership. In the end, ending hunger is an issue that is resolved at the country level and has to go through country ownership. And of course, ODA of only 1% for nutrition seems to be extremely low. Let's hope to see it increase after ICN2. But in any case, it is an issue of country ownership with the participation of all of the partners, and also putting in place systems of mutual accountability. In order to get there, we have to involve all the partners, and that means we also have to involve all the people with their rights, and very importantly, cannot be done without women. Let's also empower women as part of our efforts to improve nutrition and to eliminate hunger from the world. Thanks very much to all. A very special thanks to all of our panelists.